One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.
Hey guys, it's Candace.
And it's Elena.
And you're listening to Cousins on Crime. Yeah, welcome back. Welcome back. Welcome to another episode of Doom and Gloom.
Doom and Gloom.
Yeah.
Hmm.
I'm sorry, but I'm just a little distracted because there's a deer in your living room.
Yes, there's
a deer head.
Yeah, there is.
Where are you going to put that?
Well, Chris and I have both had many discussions.
Like a Monica Chandler Barca Lounger discussion.
Yeah.
Is it going to go in the living room or is it going to go in the guest room?
Or the garage.
Or the garage.
He already has one in the garage.
Okay.
And so I would prefer it go out there, but he's really proud of this one.
Okay.
So.
It's a big one.
And his hunting buddy did the taxidermy work on it. So he wants to show it off.
Yeah.
I might let him put it above his office desk.
Okay. Like right there?
Right.
Like where? Like by the kitchen table?
Right where we are recording.
Okay. Well, good luck with that decision.
Is that going to bother you?
No. I mean, God bless. I mean, thank you for your service, dear. I mean, did you save his meat and stuff?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. We've been eating spaghetti and deer chili.
Okay. That's
chili's one of my favorite.
So sorry to the vegetarians listening.
Oh yeah.
I'm so sorry. I personally don't like deer meat, but yeah. I don't really like a lot of meat. I'm kind of a weirdetarian, like a chick-a-vegetarian.
Okay. Yeah.
So mostly chicken.
Yeah. I don't eat a lot of meat myself.
Because chickens are stupid. Let's just put it that way. Chickens are dumb.
Bawk, bawk.
So, and there's so many of them.
But they give us eggs.
Yeah. Yeah.
They do.
They
have a purpose.
Yeah.
They do.
This is now an agricultural podcast.
Farm animal.
We are so versatile. Sometimes we're lifestyle. Sometimes we're like, you know,
anything,
home and garden.
Yeah. But anything you want to know, just ask us.
Yeah, I mean,
we're here for you.
As Daniel says, between me and my brother, we know everything.
Right, right.
Ask me a question. That's what my brother knows. Shall we?
Let's do it.
Okay. Enough of this rigmarole. Mm-hmm. So the case I have for you today is a real whodunit.
Oh.
It is a mystery. You're going to love it. I mean, you
so
love mysteries.
Do I need my clue?
Yes.
Card? My
probably. Unfortunately, we don't have many for the suspects.
Okay.
And we have no murder weapons.
Okay.
So it'll be a very short game of clue and you know, like we probably won't get anywhere. So,
uh-oh.
But I'm going to tell you everything I know, everything that's been reported. Unsolved Mysteries did a really good, I mean, it was the most thorough reporting on this case that I saw.
Okay.
I mean, nothing, I heavily relied on that episode because there was a lot of detectives, crime scene photos, diagrams.
Hmm.
So it was just really good for this episode. So we're going to the 70s. So
okay.
It was Sunday, September 4th, 1977. A young campus patrolman, Thomas Cocotaglo. So sorry if I'm not pronouncing. I did look it up.
Mm-hmm.
So I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. He was driving his rounds around 11:30 p.m. It was just after Labor Day holiday and classes were to begin in a few days. So the campus was really quiet and there was hardly, no students should have really been there at that time.
Okay.
He'd only been on shift for 30 minutes, but he wasn't expecting any action at all that
just
night.
Just a slow night.
Yeah, I mean, so as he was making his rounds, he approached the theater part of campus, the building that had the theaters in it, in his car, and he saw this dark green bicycle chained up to the handrail. And it had a basket on front, so he imagined it was probably a female's bike. It just looked out of place. He was like, it's dark.
Yeah.
Did someone leave this here? It wasn't here yesterday. Like, I don't know. So he radioed his colleague to ask if they knew anything about this bike. Is there somebody here? Or did someone leave this here? Or
catch a ride with someone else?
Yeah. Like, do you know anything about this bike? Yeah. And they were like, you know, your guess is as good as ours. They told him there shouldn't be anybody at that building. So he approached the door to check it out. The door just up the steps. And like I said, the bike was locked up to the handrail.
Okay.
That went up like steps.
Okay.
I'm not so articulate.
You know the handrail.
You know the handrail. The handrail. It was locked on a handrail. The handrail that was attached to steps that led up to a door.
So it wasn't like a bike rack.
Exactly.
Okay.
So he walked up the steps and that door that he approached was locked.
Mm-hmm.
So he thought, okay. So he unlocks the door and he entered the darkened building. Thomas told Unsolved Mysteries that there were no lights in the hallways. No rooms, no lights were on that he could see, and the hallways were just lit up red with the exit signs.
Okay. Like just so the emergency. Surely nobody's in there.
Right. And that really creeped him out because he was like, So he passes through these silent hallways. He's shining his flashlight down the corridors and into little rooms here and there until he came to the main auditorium. On the stage, there was an upright piano off to one side. And about 4 feet or so away from the piano, he saw a heap of something on the stage. First, he thought someone might be sleeping there.
Oh.
And as he kind of walked closer, he started to think, oh, it must be a prop because it wasn't moving at all.
Yeah.
Like it's completely
if
lifeless.
If this person heard me, maybe they would.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. You would expect to rouse somebody.
Yeah.
But those fleeting thoughts would soon be replaced by the startling reality of what laid before him. He was nearly right up on the object now when those eerie exit lights illuminated a naked body covered in what would turn out to be a piano blanket. And there was blood everywhere.
Oh no.
This person was unrecognizable. In fact, he could only infer that it was a female from the shiny earring he saw contrasted against her bloody face.
Oh my goodness.
Thomas crouched down to feel for a pulse, but she was cold and stiff, and suddenly he finds himself in the middle of a crime scene. I mean, was supposed to be this chill night, just going around campus, you know, having your donut and coffee on your shift, was now something completely different. Now, Thomas drew his weapon immediately. And he radioed to Trenton State Campus Police, as well as the Ewing Police Department, for backup to tell them what he had just found. In his report, he states that he backed up to a large door on the stage and unlocked the padlock that held it closed, but the door wouldn't open all the way. Now, he doesn't explain, nor could I find mention of, like, what he meant by that, like it couldn't open all the way. Like, I don't know if the door was stuck in or if there was something blocking it, but I don't think he tried to get it open any further. I think he was just like, forget it.
So there was a padlock on the door.
There was a padlock on the
door. How did he unlock it?
He had a key, I guess.
Just a key padlock?
It just says in his report that he unlocked the padlock. I don't know if it was he had a master key or whatever.
Okay.
But I think his intention was to go on the other side of the door and wait for backup to get there. But when he couldn't open the door, he just kind of crouched down in place. Oh. So he crouched down with his weapon in hand and he was facing the body. I don't know what went through his mind. Maybe he peed a little. No. Sorry, Thomas, but I don't know. Maybe he did. I would.
Yeah.
But what goes through your mind when you're
like, I'm going to sit here with my back against the wall and I nobody have to can wait. Come up on yeah. me. Yeah.
And he's like, I'm going to keep an eye on this body, like, and just,
oh my goodness.
I have to wait here in the dark, in the silence. Yes. But luckily, he didn't have to wait long for people to arrive. Because, I mean, you know, the campus police was on campus. So,
oh, crazy concept.
Isn't that weird how that happens? But, yeah, so thankfully, pretty soon that silent auditorium was bustling with cops. You know what makes my arm hair stand at attention?
Ooh, what's that?
None of them could figure out how to turn the lights on.
Why? Like, there's...
It was a theater. I mean, those lights are somewhere... Like, the light... Okay. You know, the lighting system is somewhere else.
Like, it's not just a light switch on this...
Exactly. Yeah. You can't just flip on a light. Like, it's... You know, the sound and the light. There's, actual... So, they were all looking around in the dark for...
Ew.
Any nearby light switch, they had to make a couple phone calls to actually get directions on how to access the lights. And once they did, one by one, each section in the theater lit up until the light reached the main stage. And it was then that the actual horror of the situation could truly be taken in.
Mm.
There was a substantial amount of blood.
What in the world?
Around the victim's body and surrounding areas. I mean, there were some belongings laying right by the piano, some shoes with some socks tucked into one of the shoes, a backpack, and what looked like to be a sleeping bag rolled up.
Oh.
Her headscarf and a broken earring were laying downstage in another pool of blood. Quickly were able to identify the victim as 25-year-old Sigrid Stevenson from the California driver's license that was found in the backpack.
Oh.
She was originally from Livermore, California, but had been living in New Jersey attending Trenton State College, studying for her master's in music, and she wanted to be a teacher.
Oh.
She was described as a quirky, free spirit, and she was amazing at playing the piano.
Oh.
She could read music at a very early age. I mean,
wish I could hear her play.
I know. People were amazed because you could just give her sheet music as a kid and just give her a second to look at it and she could just play it.
I wish I could do that.
I know, right? I always like to play by ear because I'm lazy.
Yeah.
I could read music, but it just took me so much longer. But I just admire people who have that skill, you know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure.
But her childhood friend said that when she was playing that piano, you know, this wild, carefree girl just kind of came together and just like this focus fell over her. And she just like was calm and like in another place.
Wow.
While none of the officers knew her personally, it was just shocking to see someone so vibrant, dead like this, like.
Yeah, I mean, obviously in a struggle with somebody all over the place.
Seriously, yes. I mean, there was blood spatter on the piano bench, the sheet music that was on the piano.
Wow.
Large areas behind the piano, beside it. There was this long drag mark where it looked like the killer may have like tried moving her or he drug her at one point. Maybe he was going to move her out of there and decided against it. I mean, it was a violent scene. Violent.
Hmm.
The deputy medical examiner, Dr. Rafat Ahmad, who worked Sigrid's murder, performed the autopsy the following morning. Her injuries were consistent with a ferocious beating. Hmm. And the official cause of death was determined to be blunt force trauma to the head. She had bruises all over her torso and legs, and there were multiple lacerations on the back of her head and a deep laceration on her face. She even had some broken ribs.
Oh, my goodness.
It was a fight. Another interesting injury was ligature marks found around her wrists. that looked like handcuff marks.
Okay.
There were like two parallel lines. They were pretty symmetrical.
Oh.
In addition, you could see a gap in the blood that was on her back. So it seemed as though she had her arms behind her back.
Oh my goodness.
While she was being attacked, the blood spattered on to her back.
Okay.
And then her restraints were removed at some point. So there's like this stop pattern in the blood.
Hmm.
No restraints were found on her person while she was laying there.
Well, the person's like, I'm going to need those.
Well,
let me take those back.
Right. Or that's evidence. So they were removed by the killer and taken with them.
My wheels are turning over here.
Her underwear was off, laying nearby her body, and her shirt had been removed and tied around her mouth. So naturally, a rape kit was performed. And as the Emmy put it, she didn't find live sperm in the vaginal swabs, only the dead heads of the sperm.
Oh.
So considering rigor mortis had set in completely, she estimated time of death to be between 7:30 and 10 p.m. the night she was discovered. The blood had already started to congeal in areas. The spatter had dried, so as we know, head wounds bleed profusely.
Right.
So the medical examiner says she would have died within minutes of her, first initial serious injuries on her head. And clearly she was killed right there. I mean, she wasn't killed somewhere else just because of the amount of blood that was there.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Now, immediately, it was a mystery. Like, the crime scene didn't reveal any clues that would point police in the direction of a suspect and really how it happened. Mm-hmm. Like, how did they enter? Like, what did they use? Like,
yeah.
There were no footprints in the blood, no report of blood transfer on items like doors leading out of the theater. We know that one door was locked. Actually, two doors were locked. There was that padlocked door on the stage, and then the door on the stairs leading into the building was also locked.
Okay.
So how'd they get in and out? There was nothing. It was just nothing. And a search of the auditorium, the rest of the building, didn't yield any evidence. And a broader search of the rest of the campus, for that matter, didn't turn up any evidence either. No objects that could have been considered as a murder weapon. No bloody baseball bat hidden in the bushes or pipe laying around. If the campus was a ghost town, why was Sigrid there in the first place? I bet you're wondering.
Yeah.
Like, what was she doing there?
Well, I would think maybe just in her own little world playing the piano.
Yeah, Elena. See, yeah, that's
not
weird
to
me.
Doing something she loves.
Exactly. Okay, so let's talk about Sigrid. She had just returned to campus September 2nd, 2 days before she was found, from her trip where she hitchhiked through Nova Scotia.
Oh.
You know, the 70s. and she was a free spirit, so.
Wow.
She had lodging set up for her return back to New Jersey, but her room wasn't ready for a couple of days. So she was going to be staying with a local family in the area, and they were out of town on a trip. And they were like, do you mind just waiting till we get back from our trip in a couple days before you, like, come on in?
Yeah, okay.
This left her trying to figure out where she's going to stay for the next 2 days.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that was like a last minute request. Like, she had already gotten back to New Jersey and they were like, oh, by the way, we're out of town.
Not just yet.
I don't know. Or I don't know if she was like, oh, I'll just head back or whatever. So she knew how isolated and empty the campus would be. So she thought it would just be okay to maybe crash in one of the buildings for a couple days. No one would probably even see her, you know?
Yeah.
I don't think she felt like she was being a delinquent.
Yeah.
Or trying to break rules. I really don't think that was the case. I genuinely think she just felt comfortable being there.
Yeah. I can see that.
She knew that Kendall Hall was easy to get into That was the building she was found in. And there was this like janky door that it locked, but if you pulled it hard enough, you could open it.
Okay.
Think about like my guest bathroom. Like, you know, when you get stuck in there, if you pull hard enough,
that has
you
happened. Can get out. Is this the door?
This was a different door.
Okay.
Not the locked door. So it was just kind of
The doors were just janky. Okay.
Well, there was this one door, and apparently it was kind of known that that was just a weird door. So she knew it was weird. And plus it had a green room with a couch.
Okay.
So, perfect. You know, the actors would, you know, hang out in there between scenes and, you know, get their clothes on and stuff. And there was a piano in the theater that she could play while she was just hanging out. It might sound odd to most true crime addicts, but this just feels like a really college student thing to do.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, like,
and also the 70s. Even like when I was in college, I would see kids napping on the couches all the time. I mean, I had I was a crisis counselor, so my shifts were really late, and sometimes I'd be leaving a building that was dark, and you'd just see a student like laying on a couch. I mean, and I never thought anything weird of that because it's just.
The college life,
you know? So police learned that there had been a play Saturday evening, September 3rd, in the Black Box stage, which was a smaller theater located in Kendall Hall. Cast members of the play recalled seeing Sigrid and interacting with her that evening. Mm-hmm. One actor in the play named Chuck went into the green room where she was... I don't know if she was sleeping or just relaxing, but he flips on the light and he's like, oh, sorry.
Oh, no.
And she kind of shoots up from the couch going, oh, hi. You know, she certainly didn't expect to be seen or, you know, I don't know.
Discovered.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I don't think she expected anyone to be in that building at all. But once she learned there was a play, she was like, oh, I'll go watch. So, you know, this is just how she was. And she was mingling with the actors and as they came in and out off stage, and she kind of sat and, you know, kind of off to the side and watched. Now, after the first act, one of the actresses told authorities that she spoke with Sigrid and she was super friendly. She was in a great upbeat mood. But after the second act, she saw her again, and she was kind of sitting and slumped. She didn't know Sigrid, but she could just tell something happened. And so she looks down, and she's like, what's wrong? And Sigrid told her that she had just lost an argument with someone.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. This witness didn't really know what she meant by that, and Sigrid didn't elaborate. She just, you know, she just was like, oh, well. I'm so sorry about that. And, you know,
see, these are the times that when you ask somebody how they're doing, like,
you wish they would go ahead and. Yeah, exactly.
Give me the details.
Yeah. Like, tell me everything.
Yeah.
But she just went back to her play, finished out her play. And she said that she saw Sigrid one last time before the cast and crew left the theater that night. She didn't speak with her. She just kind of saw her. And that was the last anyone saw her alive, reportedly. As far as Sigrid's movements before her murder that Sunday, investigators weren't really sure what she was up to during the day. There wasn't CCTV everywhere or cell phone tower data like we have today. Mm-hmm. Their best guess was that maybe she hung around campus. Maybe she went for a bike ride around. Maybe she went to get something to eat. They didn't know for sure, you know?
Yeah.
All they knew was where she ended up that night.
Oh.
It is presumed that Sigrid was there in the theater playing the piano on stage when she was attacked.
Mm-hmm.
I saw some reports suggesting she may have intended to sleep on the stage since her sleeping bag was found near her body. But if I may, I don't think that's necessarily the case. I just think that I mean, her sleeping bag was tidily rolled up.
Okay.
I think maybe she just moved her stuff out of the green room.
Yeah.
Just like in case somebody came again.
Yeah, taking it to whatever.
Yeah, just like taking it with her. I mean, she wasn't like moving into this green room. She was like, I'll just take my stuff out and I'll come back tonight. Mm-hmm. And I think she was just playing really late at night. And I don't think she intended to sleep on the stage. I think that's not necessarily the case. Maybe she did. Who knows?
Yeah.
Only she knows that. So she's playing the piano late at night. Police believe that the sexual assault was the motive for the crime. Maybe this person came in calmly and said hi to her.
Mm.
Maybe he made an advance towards her and she rebuffed him. And he absolutely lost it. But whoever did this to her was enraged for some reason.
Sounds like it.
Now, a couple days passed and it was time for school to start. But word had already reached the student body about what happened to Sigrid.
Oh, no.
And they were likely not looking forward to getting back on campus. I mean,
mm-mm.
And like police, they had to believe that it was someone in their midst. Yeah. I mean, it's a college campus. I mean, who would just come onto a college campus that didn't belong there? Now, let's talk about the few suspects.
Okay, let's do it.
And persons of interest. Campus police were the first to be put under the microscope for obvious reasons.
Mm-hmm.
You have Thomas, who found her.
Right.
You know? That one wasn't as viable. He'd only been on shift for 30 minutes. It just, that one didn't really seem to go anywhere. Well, but
and so there's no alibi as what he was doing before work.
So, Lena, you're going to learn that the interviews and interrogation, they're not really interrogations, but like the interviews were just very fluffy.
Okay.
So they looked at campus police because who else just happens to have handcuffs on their person stumble upon a woman alone on the campus?
Mm-hmm.
Also, she had these long cylindrical marks on her back that could have been made by a police baton.
Yes.
All of the campus officers were interviewed and polygraphed. And it was determined that they all seemed to be telling the truth.
Seemed.
There were a couple weird things, though, like with the campus officers. One of them supposedly told another officer that he'd killed Sigrid.
What?
And others said this guy was a creep towards women. Like, they were like, yeah, I could totally see that. But when that information was given to detectives on the case, it didn't really go anywhere. The guy who supposedly confessed to killing Sigrid passed a polygraph. He denied ever saying that he killed Sigrid. So police were like, well, this was probably a misunderstanding.
Mm.
I mean, I don't know how you misunderstand someone saying they killed someone, especially someone who just was found murdered.
No.
But whatever. They moved on from this guy.
Oh, fantastic.
Now, remember Chuck, the actor who was in the play who walked in on Sigrid sleeping in the green room? Well, Sigrid had a playbill from that night's performance.
Mm-hmm.
With Chuck's name circled in the playbill because he was listed as an actor in the play. And there was a note underneath that said, nice guy, gave me a beer.
Oh.
So police interviewed him and spoke with him about his interaction with Sigrid.
I love that she documented that.
Well, I'll tell you later on, but she also kept a journal and it was just like she just wrote everything down. But Chuck passed a polygraph, and overall, he seemed to be telling the truth. So they move on from Chuck. Next, the lighting guy for the play was looked at. A former detective on the case from 2018, Julia Caldwell, said that Sigrid probably had the lights on when she was playing the piano, and the killer would have had to turn them off because they were off when she was found. This lighting guy was also asked if he had a key to the building, and he said no, but he did. They're like, what's that on your belt loop right there. Oh. And he's like, oh,
this key?
Oh, these are the keys.
Yeah, that goes to this building.
Someone was like, what is that? And so this just seemed like a flat out lie. How do you not, how do you say you don't have keys to the building when you absolutely do? I don't know. Maybe he didn't normally carry the keys and he just forgot that he had them. I don't know.
Maybe he just really was like, they'll really think it's me if I tell him, even if it wasn't him.
Yeah, anyway. I don't know. But this just was like really suspicious to the police because they were like, why would you lie about that?
Yeah, exactly.
He passed a polygraph and they moved on.
Dumb.
There were other employees at the college that were investigated. There was a maintenance man that was looked at because he had access to the campus and keys to Kendall Hall. This maintenance guy was known to have a casual relationship with Secret, actually. He'd sometimes unlock the doors and let her into a building if it was after hours or locked. Oh. He'd see her around campus and wave. And Secret had his phone number and name in her belongings. Some people said that he took a special interest in her and like knew that she was always going and playing piano. So he, I don't know.
I'm wondering if this is like the man she or person
lost
that
an
she
argument
lost
with.
The argument to. Maybe it, he's like, you can't stay here anymore. And anyway.
Interesting. It just seems like, you know, maybe I'm playing devil's advocate, but this seems like a friendly relationship with no other. Maybe he had the same kind of relationship with all the other students.
Okay.
That doesn't seem weird to me.
Yeah.
That he was like, he knew her and whatever.
Yeah, you want to get to know the people around.
Yeah. They couldn't place him in the building that day. They couldn't really connect him to her that day or to the building. Okay. But there was something interesting. He was actually fired shortly after Secret's murder for substance abuse issues.
Oh, that doesn't look good.
It doesn't look good, but they didn't dig into him. They didn't have anything substantial to go on. So this suspect kind of fizzled out.
That's crazy. Wow.
So former Detective Julia Caldwell that I mentioned earlier, she still really likes the lighting guy or the maintenance guy for this crime. She's like, those two just, I can't get past them. They looked the best to her, but when she had reopened the case, she actually had to retire due to a medical issue.
Oh man.
So she had to kind of like stop right there.
Yeah.
And the case went ice cold early on, like ice cold.
Well, probably need to circle around and question each person all over again.
Yeah. So they didn't have, you know, the technology to test potential DNA that was collected. And digital forensics, like we said, wasn't what it is today. So it's not like you could start tracking everybody's, you know, cell phone pings or look at her phone calls or anything like that.
Right.
Now, I was so surprised at how polygraph focused this investigation was.
Every time you say they passed the polygraph, I'm rolling my eyes.
Yeah, because it seems like everyone they spoke to, they gave a polygraph. Like, oh, they passed a polygraph. Yeah. You're done. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to do some digging into like the polygraph of the time. Like, what was the culture of the time and why? Why were they just using the polygraph? It just seemed like that's what they were doing. The polygraph machine was invented in the early 1920s. Did you know that?
No, I was over here sitting thinking like,
I had no idea.
How long have they been using this?
So in my initial stupid thought, I was like, maybe the polygraph had just been invented and they were, you know,
like, this is going to work.
Blonde moment. nope. But when I learned it was like the early 1920s, I was like, holy moly cannoli. but, you know, over the years, it's gone through many changes and improvements. The polygraph we know today measures more than it did upon its initial conception. In addition to heart rate, now we look at like respiration, blood pressure, and even sweat production. The federal government was using the polygraph quite a lot in the 1960s, and polygraph results were admissible in courts in the 1970s. Did you know that?
I did not know that.
Yeah. So according to Hastings Law Journal, polygraph results were admitted into evidence in civil cases during the 1970s and under special circumstances in criminal cases. Mm. So in 1974, it was admissible in a criminal case against a juvenile in Massachusetts. Then in 1975, New Mexico Supreme Court admitted polygraph results in a criminal case. And then in 1977, the year Sigrid was murdered, it was used in a trial in Ohio. But polygraph use was actually decreasing in the 1970s. And by the 1980s, while polygraph evidence was still admissible in some cases, you could tell by looking at the case law history that questions were starting to arise about its reliability. And and by the late 80s, states were nixing its admissibility. They were like, no, we can't.
But we still use it.
We can't say someone's heart rate, you know. Like, they weren't using it in court is what I meant. Okay, like, they were starting to say,
yeah,
we can't possibly convict someone because they failed a lie detector test. And then Congress ended up saying, oh, and by the way, let's not use polygraphs to exclude people from getting jobs, because, you know, they were doing that too.
Oh, wow.
With all the research I did on polygraph use, nothing stood out to me as being the reason why, in Sigrid's case, polygraphs were used so much. Mm-hmm. Maybe it was standard in that police department, in the Ewing Police Department at that time.
Maybe.
But I can't help but wondering if they hadn't been so focused on polygraphing everyone and did more digging or used other investigative techniques, maybe we'd have more to work with in this case.
Yeah.
40 some odd years later.
Oh my goodness.
So over the decades since Sigrid was murdered, various investigators have cracked open that old box. You know, that dusty old box that's been sitting on the shelf, and looked at the case file, looked at the evidence from Sigrid's brutal murder to see if they could solve the puzzle with so many missing pieces.
Yeah.
They didn't just look at the case, though. They fully reopened the case over the years. Many became obsessed with solving the mystery, but they kept running into brick walls. It's like the minute they thought they were on to something, a brick wall was right around the corner, just waiting in the wings. Every one of them found that the evidence was so lacking in the case. Items were collected, photographs were taken of the scene, reports and statements were taken, but it was all just a collection of stuff with seemingly like no fluidity. Like, it just didn't really form a picture.
Okay.
With modern day technology, investigators found DNA believed to be the killer's on Sigrid's blouse.
Really?
Yes. So there were a few knots that were tied in her blouse. And remember, it was tied over her like mouth to keep her quiet. But whoever tied those knots left some skin cells.
Oh, there
within
you go.
One of those knots.
Okay, so what have we done with that?
They did test it. They did get a DNA profile. And after all this time, there was still one person of interest that still stuck out as looking really good for the crime to most investigators.
Okay.
Chuck. Susie Banks, an ex-girlfriend of Chuck's, wrote on an internet forum that Sigrid's case, like, there was an internet forum about Sigrid's case, and she wrote on there, "I think I know who killed Sigrid."
Oh.
She dated Chuck back in 1987, and he'd been very abusive to her.
Oh.
Yes. During one particularly cruel beating, he made a comment to Susie that he'd killed before, he got away with it, and he'd do it again.
Oh, no.
And there was another revelation that the new investigators unearthed about Chuck. Something.
Why did she not?
What?
Why did she not call it in? Did she call the detectives and say?
No, she just wrote on the forum.
Instead of typing it out call somebody?
No, I mean, she didn't really have any evidence to say. Like,
we,
She just said, you know, he told me he killed before, he'd do it again. But there was something that the investigators could not get past. Do you want to guess what Chuck's character was in the play?
Was he a killer?
He played a security guard.
Oh.
And his costume included prop handcuffs and a nightstick.
Whoa. Whoa, guys.
Whoa. Those items were never collected or tested.
I'm speechless.
Yeah. Unfortunately, Chuck died in 2016, so they couldn't compare the DNA profile they had from Secret's blouse to Chuck's DNA. But they weren't completely out of luck because we have familial DNA.
Yes, next of kin.
Exactly. So they tracked down a relative and he did consent to giving his DNA sample, but the results were not a match.
What?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. With that, the possibility of Chuck being the killer was pretty much squashed.
Oh my, what? Where do we go from here?
Mm-hmm. I certainly don't want to knock the work that police did do in the beginning. And I know it's easy for us to look back and say, you know, more could have been done.
Yeah.
But I have to say more should have been done. I mean, if they had collected more physical items, conducted more interviews, maybe expanded their interviews around the suspects. Like, I didn't see any reports of them interviewing Chuck's parents or his classmates or ex-girlfriends at the time.
Yeah, alibis.
Yeah. I mean, to see what he did that night,
how he what acted he did
after, like, how was he acting? Like I said, his costume from the play, the props that were never retrieved. Did he take them home with him? Mm. What happened to them?
Right.
Were they still at the school? Like, what about the janitor? Was anyone in his life followed up with?
Right.
So, Secret's killer would have most undoubtedly been covered in blood.
Yeah, I would think so.
Covered. Unless you were Dexter, dressed in a rubber apron, well, gloves and all that.
There is that.
How did he get out of that theater without leaving a speck behind on anything?
Right.
Was there blood evidence they didn't find? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't hear anything reported about access to the basement because there was an orchestra pit in front of the stage and there was a basement entrance in the orchestra pit. And if you have joined our Patreon, if you haven't, join our Patreon. I'm going to be posting crime scene photos and like diagrams and stuff on our Patreon. So to me, that's one of the things I looked. I mean, I'm sure they did their due diligence. I'm sure they looked at every exit.
Every hallway, every door.
I just didn't see reporting on anything like that. Where did Sigrid go that Sunday? What did she do?
Who did she talk to?
Thank you. So did she go somewhere to have lunch and she struck up a conversation with a guy and said, don't tell anybody, but I'm like sleeping at Kendall Hall on campus. Like she was really friendly and chatty and I can totally see her, you know, being like, you know, don't tell anyone.
Yeah.
I'm not bothering anyone. I'm just crashing there. Someone knew she was going to be there.
Yeah.
Someone knew. I fully believe someone went there for her.
Yeah.
Like it, to me, everything points to that. It doesn't seem like anyone could have stumbled upon her.
And I don't want to accuse, but Thomas seeing the bike saying, oh, somebody must be here. He goes in, he sees her and takes his opportunity. He's got the handcuffs.
Yeah, I don't know. He was, like I said, he was only on duty for 30 minutes. And they estimated her time of death between 7 and 10:30 p.m. So an hour before she was found was the latest she might have been killed.
Okay.
So that's not to say he couldn't have come onto campus and killed her
maybe
and then
he
left
saw her
and
the
then,
night before there and thought maybe yeah. I'll go check and see.
But he was interviewed like on Unsolved Mysteries. Okay. He's gone on to be a detective. He's actually retired
really?
Now.
Really? Okay.
And I didn't get any sort of vibe from him. Okay. He seemed like that really affected him in his life
oh,
and
wow.
finding her. And he was like only 22.
Well, yeah.
At
such
the time.
A heinous crime.
Yeah. And he hadn't started his
22 years old.
Law enforcement career yet. So oh. he was like, that just really has stuck with me my whole life. And the fact that it hasn't been solved.
Oh, man.
So
how many of these officers or witnesses or and suspects are still alive, and can we go have another conversation?
Yeah, that's
have
I
they,
don't know. I
have
don't
they
know.
That's not reported anywhere.
So it's really interesting you say that, because that's one of the things I thought of. And like I said, the reporting is so limited in this case. And that Unsolved Mysteries episode was the most thorough that right. I saw. They didn't speak about re-interviewing. Really, the DNA was the most recent thing.
Okay.
That it didn't match Chuck's family.
Do you know who along the line, like how far down the line of this person that gave their...
No, I don't. I don't know if it was a
brother
or a child or... Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if they mentioned that in the Unsolved Mysteries episode. I didn't write it down.
Oh, okay.
But it was a male family member.
Okay.
And I assume that it would have been the closest.
Yeah.
What if the skin cells on her blouse were not the killers, though?
Oh.
Like, think if you will. That person who killed her didn't leave any of their physical evidence behind. No footprints.
It seemed like they were very careful.
Well, it just, if you look at the crime scene photos and the blood around her body,
mm-hmm.
how did he not leave
any
transfer evidence anywhere on his way out?
What in the world?
Did they take fingerprints? I don't know, because there weren't, I mean, there were likely millions of fingerprints in that theater. I mean,
yeah,
it's a theater. I can't even imagine the task.
Oh, yeah.
But it just seems like testing all the doorknobs might have been a thing to do, and running it by the students. That just seems like something
true.
Simple to do.
Yeah.
But let's explore this a little further, because if the killer left skin cells behind, that means they had their bare hands out.
Right.
So it feels like, I don't know.
This has me so confused.
I know. So to me, the fact that those skin cells don't match Chuck does not really... I mean, you're talking to a scientist. I love science.
Yeah.
If the DNA doesn't match, it doesn't match. It's pretty black and white. But the gray in me, like,
it's
but
a
what
very,
if...
It's a very likely suspect.
What could... Maybe it was Chuck and he was wearing gloves. Maybe those skin cells that were on her blouse were not his. Maybe they were someone else's.
Ooh.
You know what I'm
saying?
This
is making me dizzy.
However, the skin cells were found in the knot. However, what if those skin cells were from a lab technician that was unknotting her stuff?
Oh.
That's not unreasonable to think that some skin cells could have blown off their head and floofed into the... evidence.
And
I mean,
it's not
something
that we could put like in ancestry.com and like it comes up with these random family members and we track it back to that. I mean,
there was no mention about running that profile through CODIS. They just said that they had the DNA profile and they needed
and
a match to it. So I hope that with that Unsolved Mysteries episode, there will be renewed interest in this case.
Yeah.
If we have a DNA profile, come on.
We're closer than ever,
I
would say.
We are closer than ever to getting an answer for this. I truly think this case can be solved.
Yeah.
I so wish that polygraphs were not, I just feel like they were like, oh, he passed a polygraph. He's not lying.
Yeah.
You know, it just seems like so much more could have been done.
Agreed.
Could have been done.
Yeah.
Done. Like boots on the ground, hands on.
Questions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Someone walked free. Like someone killed her and then went on to live their lives. How do you do that? How do you do that?
Well, and they could have done it again.
I could go on.
Yeah.
Like I could literally spend so much more time asking all these questions that I have.
Yeah.
But I think let's just end it here.
Okay.
Sigrid kept a journal.
Oh.
I mentioned this earlier. Yes. Her last entry was the night before she died, the Saturday night. It was 11:43 p.m. The play had just finished, and she wrote that they were breaking down the stage. And her very last words were just how dark it was about to be in that theater.
Oh, because they were turning the lights out.
Because they were turning all the lights out. Isn't that so chilling?
That is very chilling. Oh, gosh.
So, if you have any information at all about the murder of Sigrid Stevenson, please contact the Ewing Police Department at 609-882-1313.
Whoa. Thank you for telling her story. She sounds like a beautiful person and somebody who I would want to talk to and listen to all the kinds of stories that she has to tell from her trips and that she took. But
just imagine all the students' lives she would have touched as a music teacher, and how maybe someone would have gone on to be a famous musician and say it was because of Miss Stevenson, you know, my music teacher.
Yes.
But she never got that far.
Oh, I'm sorry, Sigrid. Rest in peace. Wow. Well, that was great. Let's do it again sometime.
Let's do it. See you next week, guys.
Bye.
Bye. Thank you for listening to Cousins on Crime. Get connected with us by becoming a free member on our Patreon. Or for just $5 a month, you'll have access to bonus episodes, discussion groups, and much more. If you can't afford $5 a month, we get it. Inflation, am I right? Please consider leaving us a positive review and rating wherever you listen.
And don't forget merch. Support our podcast and show the love by sporting t-shirts with our latest designs, or grab an evidence bag to keep the chain of custody for all your valuables. Don't forget to follow our show on your favorite streaming app so you never miss an episode, and get photos and updates on our Instagram at Cousins on Crime Podcast or our Cousins on Crime Facebook page. Have a case suggestion? Email us at cousinsoncrime@gmail.com.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th. So get your tickets now at kosai.org.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Labor Day sale and get 35% off paints and stains August 22nd through September 4th. With prices starting at $31.84, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.